The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with Steph and the Warriors going off again. Is this the beginning of a new golden age for the Warriors out west? Plus, the heat is on in the Eastern Conference Finals. What has to happen for Boston to bounce back tonight? And the Packers OTAs get underway this week, and their most important player is likely to be MIA. Does Aaron Rodgers owe it to Green Bay to show up? Welcome to Get Up. I am Dan Graziano in for Greeny, and look who is here. I got J.J. Redick. I got Zach Lowe to talk NBA. We're going to have Jalen Rose come by later. For the football, we've got Mike Tannenbaum, and we're going to have Dan Orlovsky come by later. This is going to be a big show, but we are starting with our game of the night, Warriors-Mavericks. Game three of the Western Conference Finals. Warriors up 2-0 in the series. They visit Dallas for game three. Let's take it late in the first. Under 10 seconds remaining in the first. Mavs down six. Luka Doncic takes it down the floor and hits the long three at the buzzer. Doncic celebrates as the Mavericks trail by three after the first. Under 4 minutes remaining in the second quarter. Now Warriors down seven. Stephen Curry hits the three from the wing off the assist by Andrew Wiggins. Warriors down four. Just over 2 minutes remaining in the second. Warriors down two. Curry, who else, drains another three from the corner. And he turned to look at his teammates before the shot even went in. He loves it. The Warriors take a one-point lead into the half. Third quarter, Golden State up nine. Curry, of course, hits the jumper. Warriors up 11 and rolling in the third. Under a minute left in the third. Curry having a big night, rattles in the three, and he was feeling it after that shot. Warriors up 10 points at the end of the third quarter. Early fourth, Mavericks down 12. Luka doing what he can. Drives in for the one-handed dunk. Puts Dallas down 10, under 9 minutes left in the fourth. Now the Mavs down 11. Doncic with the three. That cuts the Golden State lead to eight. But they wouldn't get a whole lot closer. Under 7 minutes remaining. Warriors up eight. Andrew Wiggins with the highlight of the night. Puts down the one-handed dunk off the assist from Curry. Initially, they call this an offensive foul. But the Warriors, of course, challenge it. They win the challenge. They win the game. 109-100. Take a 3-0 series lead. Steph Curry had 31 points and said this.
The motivation is the fact that we're back on the stage with the opportunity to chase a finals appearance again after, you know, 2 years of hiatus. I don't need any extra motivation. It's just trying to take advantage of the opportunity.
Last night was Curry's seventh 30-point game this postseason. The only players with that many 30-point games in a single postseason at age 34 or older are a couple guys you've heard of named Michael Jordan and LeBron James. They were both finals MVP in the seasons in which they pulled that off. As promised, we have Zach Lowe and J.J. Redick here to break it all down for us. So, guys, the Warriors are up 3-0 in the series, on their way to the NBA Finals, it looks like, barring some sort of miracle by Dallas. JJ, are the Warriors now the front runners in your mind to win the whole thing?
They're certainly capable of winning the championship. I've said all along, I think whoever wins the East is probably my favorite. I look across the board, you know, whether it's the Heat, the Celtics, what they've had to go through in the playoffs, the teams they've had to beat, I think has been a little tougher than the Warriors' run. Now, of course, the Warriors, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, battle-tested as always, hungry for that championship. But I look at the teams, whoever comes out of the East is my favorite.
Zach?
I think at this moment, it has to be the Warriors, only because to me, the Celtics have been the best team in the NBA since January 1st. They're the best team on paper, but they're down 2-1. Mm-hmm. So it's like at best 50-50 they win the series. Rob Williams seems to be out every other game. Marcus Smart has missed a couple games. Jason Tatum just got banged up. So they're banged up, not fully healthy. I think right now the Warriors cruising, hopefully to a long period of rest before the finals. Like, you got to give them a little bit of a nod. I agree with JJ. Both East teams are really strong. I would pick Boston, everyone healthy, but that's not where we are right now.
And that's a big factor, right? I mean, Golden State could wrap their series up tomorrow night, and if the Celtics are going to win, for example, it's going to take them another week to do it. Does that factor into your prediction?
I think it does factor into it a little bit. I think the most important piece for the Celtics is Marcus Smart. I look at this playoff run. I look specifically with this Heat series. He's their most important player. We saw him in game one being out. He comes back in game two, has a monster night. His grit, his toughness in game three coming back from that ankle sprain is ultimately what gave that building some energy. I was there at the game. When he came back in, the garden lit up and he hit that sidestep three. So to me, if he's healthy and able to go and at 100%, I give the Celtics the edge.
So, again, we're assuming the Warriors will win. They're up 3-0. No one's ever come back from that deficit in the NBA playoffs. So when we look at Golden State, I mean, this is a team that we got so used to seeing them, right, in the finals for years. In the last couple of years, we didn't. Are you at all surprised, Zach, that they're back?
I'm not. I was high on them to start the season. And to me, the story began at the end of last season when in the last 25 games, I think they went 15-5 going into the play-in tournament. And they looked like the Warriors again. And then they doubled down in the offseason with players, signing players who fit their style of play. So I'm not that surprised. But I do think we need to step back and just zoom out. It's remarkable that three calendar years later, with Durant gone, with Klay coming off two traumatic injuries, with Steph 34 ain't young in the NBA. Draymond Green's not young anymore. The kids, Moody, Kuminga, they're not really helping that much yet, although Moody's looked fine in this series. For them to be here, it's a really remarkable achievement.
I think it's a testament to Steph Curry. I really do. The orbit around him, his universe and everything that feeds off of that, his movement, the threat of the shot. The Warriors right now scoring 50 points per game in the paint against the Mavs. That would be the most in any series in the Steve Kerr era. And it's all based on that movement. It's all based on the threat of Steph. Every time he gets double teamed, they're shooting 60% against double teams in this series. It's all based on his greatness. And to Zach's point, like I was a guard in the NBA. When you get past 33, 34, it starts to catch up with you. What he's doing right now in this playoffs is remarkable.
Yeah, it's definitely been his series, but it looks like he's going to have another one. A week ago, all we were talking about was Luka and the series that he had just had and how great. So where do we put, again, assuming Dallas doesn't come back and win the series, which we're assuming because it's never happened, what do we think about Luka's year and him going forward?
Still think it's remarkable. He's throwing up 40 bombs every game. He's just not getting enough help. I think the Mavs are tired and thin, and the Warriors have played all their non-shooters off the floor. So I think Luka's a stud. He's a killer.
Yeah, no, he's going to probably make first-team All-NBA for the third straight year. After a slow start, he was an MVP candidate. And he's been phenomenal, as always, in the playoffs. Looking forward, I watched this series. Dallas has got to get a rim protector.
So we'll see. Obviously, Luka, a bright future ahead. And a lot more NBA talk ahead on today's show. But we're going to switch now to the NFL and run the hurry up through some NFL storylines. Defensive end Jadeveon Clowney has agreed to re-sign with the Cleveland Browns. It's a one-year contract worth a maximum of $11 million. Clowney's been on four different teams the last 4 years. He had 9 sacks in 14 games for the Browns in 2021. Goes back to team up once again with Myles Garrett. Deshaun Watson will practice with many of his new teammates for the first time this week. Even if he were suspended right now, Watson could still go to OTAs, so this isn't a huge headline, but it does sound like he will be there this week with his new Cleveland teammates. Watson's still awaiting word from the league on potential discipline under the personal conduct policy as he continues to face 22 different civil lawsuits from women alleging sexual conduct. And does Aaron Rodgers need to be at OTAs tomorrow? His position coach says no. Rodgers entering his 15th season as the Packers' starting quarterback, coming off back-to-back MVP awards. Of course, he sat out the entire offseason program last year, and the Packers still managed to go 13-4 and claim the number one seed in the NFC. So, as I mentioned, Dan Orlovsky joining us now, Mike Tannenbaum. And Dan, when you hear that Rodgers is not attending or not expected to attend OTAs, which are 100% voluntary per the collective bargaining agreement, what is your reaction?
He doesn't need to be there. Listen, first of all, the Packers are a playoff football team. They are in the playoffs because how good their roster is. And the second thing is they don't play a game for like 4 months. All right. The Packers season really is going to come down to two things. Number one, Does Christian Watson, their second round wide receiver, does he exceed expectations? There's only been 3 second round wide receivers in the last 30 years to go over 1,000 yards as a rookie. And then does Aaron Rodgers play his absolute best football in January and February, not in September, October, November, December? There is no... So when a rookie goes into OTAs, right, when Christian Watson is there right now he's learning, where does he stand in the huddle? What is the formation language? What are the splits or where he's got to line up with, given what the play caller is or what his route is? What's the depth of all his routes? Aaron Rodgers doesn't need to be there for the beginning learning process for Christian Watson as his number one or number two wide receiver as the season goes on.
Mike T, since Dan is 100% correct, it makes perfect sense. I assume you agree completely?
Couldn't disagree more. And I'm going to start with a story. At the New York Jets, we brought in Jerry Rice. Dan, you may know him, maybe the greatest football player of all time. He taught me 2 lessons. Number one, he was at every special teams meeting, every mini camp, every training camp. He never missed a special teams meeting because if his peers saw him there, they knew how important special teams was. And on every game day, he showed up in a coat and tie because he was a professional. And if Aaron Rodgers wants to win a championship this year, he should be the one instructing Christian Watson from day one. Players don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And because of that, he should be the one creating a meaningful relationship. If you do all these other things that Aaron Rodgers does, sacrifice, things he puts in his body, all these retreats that we know about, go to Green Bay, Wisconsin in late May and early June to give yourself the best chance to win. The people that think it's a good idea for him not to be there are people like Matt Stafford and Tom Brady, his competition, because they're investing in their teammates. Aaron Rodgers isn't. Pro football is won on the margins. Every practice, every rep is meaningful. And the other part of this is the coaches put in a lot of time to get prepared for the OTAs. When he doesn't show up, he's signaling it's not important. So it's taking away from their credibility as well. If I'm Aaron Rodgers and I'm coming back and this is a chance to win a championship, this isn't Davante Adams. This isn't Valdez-Scantling. This is Christian Watson, who didn't even play Division I football last year. He needs every moment he possibly can so they can get the best outcome in the fall that they possibly can.
Mike T, I love you. Absolutely not. Number one, the Packers are not going to win a Super Bowl because of some reps in May and June for Christian Watson and Aaron Rodgers. You know what happens a lot to rookies? Information overload. This is, again, Christian Watson right now is just learning, hey, when I hear X nasty past 15-week X burner post, I've got to think, what does nasty mean to me? That means I cut my split and then burner post on the X. What's my burner post? Imagine him having to hear that. And then Aaron Rodgers going, hey, if we get this coverage versus this look and that backside safety does, Aaron Rodgers has a expert level, a master's level understanding of football and this offense. Christian Watson, it's going to take him 3 months just to learn what the basics in the language of this offense are. If you give him too much right now, you're not going to see that gradual incline. You want to see that gradual incline. Again, Mike T, the Packers are in the playoffs. They need Christian Watson to peak in like December and January. Not where he gets so overwhelmed where December and January he's mentally exhausted because they gave him so much in May.
So, but Dan, you know better than anybody, football is about relationships. When we were running teams, we always wanted meaningful vets in the room. LaDainian Tomlinson, Jason Taylor, Brett Favre. I could go on and on and on. And throughout the playbook, Dan, I'm talking about how to take notes in a meeting, when to hydrate, when to go out, how to take care of your body, when you stretch, how you recover. Aaron Rodgers has a lifetime of wisdom he could share with Christian Watson way beyond what ex-nasty means. So to me, that's where relationships are formed. Teams don't go away for trade camp anymore. And when you're going against Stafford and Cooper Kupp, you're going against Tom Brady and Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, you want every moment possible to form meaningful bonds. So when you hit a bump in the road, there's equity in those relationships way beyond the playbook. And if Aaron Rodgers is coming back and we're paying him $46 million a year, it's not unreasonable for us to say, hey, come to Green Bay for 10 days in late May and early June to get to know your new teammates.
All right, we got to leave it there for now. We're going to do more on this. Basically, the GM says the player should be there. The player says that it doesn't matter, and this is not surprising. We come back, though. We are going to talk some more basketball. Was this a dirty play? And will Jimmy Butler be able to go tonight in a critical game 4 for Miami? Plus, the Lakers got rejected. What does it all mean for GM LeBron James and company as they continue to look for a new head coach?
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than 1 rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We got game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight between the Heat and the Celtics, so let's recap the series so far. The Heat took the first game thanks to a dominant third quarter, outscoring the Celtics 39-14, led by Jimmy Butler, who dropped his third 40-point game of the playoffs. Boston came roaring back, though, in game 2, leading by 25 at the break and winning by that same margin. Al Horford and Marcus Smart both returned for that game, and Smart was a rebound shy of a triple-double. Then Saturday night, Miami took a 2-1 series lead despite being without Jimmy Butler in the second half due to right knee inflammation. Heat held on to win by 6 after leading by as many as 26. So the Heat lead the series 2-1. But we wanted to talk about this play. It didn't really get a whole lot of attention. And it's Peyton Pritchard of the Celtics, and he's reaching for here. Look at it here. He's reaching for Jimmy Butler's right knee. This is the knee that's the problem. This was late in the second quarter, midway through the second quarter, and of course Butler did not play the rest of the second half. So, J.J. Redick, I put it to you quite simply. Was this a dirty play by Peyton Pritchard?
No, it wasn't. This is very similar to the Jordan Poole play with Ja Morant. Look, I played in the NBA 15 years. I never knew of a single player that would attack another player trying to injure him or going after a guy who had a lingering injury on a certain body spot. I've never heard of that before. Secondly, it's Peyton Pritchard, and he grabs his quad. He doesn't grab his knee. He grabs his quad.
All right.
So there's a big difference. This was not a dirty play. It's simply Peyton Pritchard fell down. He's preventing Jimmy Butler from getting downhill, knocks him down. There's nothing to it.
I thought the same thing as I did for the Jordan Poole play. In the NBA, there's a lot of scrambling. Dudes are falling over. There's a lot of reaching. Accidents happen. I don't think there's any dirty intent here. And remember, Jimmy Butler missed a game against the Hawks with right knee inflammation in the first round. This is not a new thing. This is an ongoing thing that's been flaring up now and then. And I, from what I understand, there is no belief that this had anything to do with him not playing the second half.
But what is Pritchard doing there? Like, what is he reaching? I mean, he's reaching for something.
Yeah, he's trying to look, he fell down on that little pistol action, and he's just basically trying to prevent a basket. I mean, Kirk Heinrich once crossed me over at the top of the key at the end of the third quarter, and I fell down. And all I did the same thing. I just grabbed his quad before he could get a shot up.
So you're just trying to commit a foul.
There you go.
Basically, trying to commit a foul and get the guy to the line instead of an easy
layup.
Bad
stuff happens when players fall down. People fall down and people get hurt and people roll around. It's bad.
Yeah, it's an issue. They should stop falling down.
Stop falling.
If they can. Listen, on the Boston side, look, they're down 2-1. Tatum had a rough game
in game three. He has been their star. What do you think happened with him in that game?
Well, first of all, I think Kyle Lowry coming back was a massive help to the Heat's defense, almost as much as it was to their offense. Suddenly they could switch almost everything, and there wasn't a weak spot for Boston to pick at, which has been Boston's go-to offense against every team they face in the playoffs. Find the weakest guy, get Tatum matched up. It was harder for them to do that with Kyle Lowry. The Heat's defense, you just got to give them a lot of credit. I saw a lot of stuff, oh, the Celtics just threw away all these turnovers. Oh, what bad luck for them. Some of the turnovers were bad. Some of the turnovers were the Heat taking the ball. Well, since when did we not give a team credit for saying, oh, the ball's there, I'm taking it, and we're going the other way? It was great defense.
Oladipo had did that a few times.
Yeah.
Just straight slide feet, pickpocket. When I talked about Tatum at the beginning of the series, and I said the biggest thing for me is his decision-making. And when he is making quick decisions and being decisive with his passing or his shooting, he's a different player than when he is methodical and he just tries to hunt matchups over and over again. And to your point, when you have five defenders out there that are staring at you time and time again, it's really difficult to line a guy up. But across the board for the Celtics, it comes down to decision-making. Their passing was terrible in game three. They were throwing the ball all over the place. How many possessions ended up with them picking the ball up, turning around, and trying some desperation heave just to get the play going again? I think they got to look to get the ball moving side to side, using Al Horford more in that short role. Bam did such a good job in game three of coming up to set a screen, slipping out against that switch, catching it on the short roll, and making plays out of that. Al Horford's capable of doing that. They got to use him more in that position.
How many points we need from Tatum tonight for the Boston Celtics to win this game?
He's got to be a star. Like he's we've talked about him all playoff series. He is a top 10 player in the NBA. He's a two-way player that does things on both sides of the ball at a very high level. It doesn't matter if it's 30, 25. He just has to play like a star. He did not play like a star in game three.
Real quick, what do you need to see from Tatum?
Same thing, 25, 30, good decision-making, good shooting, efficient shot-making.
All right, we'll check it out and see if he can do it. The chase for the Stanley Cup reached Madison Square Garden on Sunday. And the Rangers were hosting the Hurricanes in Game 3 at Madison Square Garden. The Rangers were down 2-0 in the series. Over halfway through the first period, no score. Rangers on the power play. Artemi Panarin gets the puck at the point, skates in, and slap passes to Mika Zibanejad, who scores. Great wrister there by Zibanejad. A little over 5 minutes into the second, same score. Chris Kreider skates around the net and shoots over a stickless Tony D'Angelo for the goal. Rangers up 2-0. Under 2 minutes left in the third, Rangers up 2-1. Empty net for the Hurricanes. Tyler Mott picks off a pass, shoots it all the way downtown, scores on the empty net. Rangers up 3-1, and as time expires, things got ugly. Max Domi cross-checks Ryan Lindgren in the back. He slashes Domi back. They go at it. Everybody's upset. Rangers coach Gerard Gallant was not happy, and here's what he had to say.
No, I wasn't happy with the, you know, the at the end of the game that they initiated, you know. I mean, we didn't do that when the games were close. We put, you know, they put their guys on. That's fine. If they want to play like that, we got the guys that can match up. I don't like it at the end of a game. The game's over. You know, we still got four games to go with those guys. I mean, they're not sending any message. We got the guy that can handle all their guys if we want to.
Tomorrow we will have game four of the Eastern and Western Conference semifinals on ESPN and the app. Hurricanes Rangers from Madison Square Garden with the Canes up 2-1. That starts at 7 Eastern. Then it's the Flames facing Connor McDavid and the Oilers. Oilers lead 2-1 in that series. When we come back here on Get Up, Steph and the Warriors went off again. Is this the beginning of a new golden age for Golden State? Plus, the Lakers got rejected. What does it all mean for LeBron James and company? They continue their search for a new head coach. We'll tell you all about it when we come back. Back on Get Up. Western Conference Finals last night. Warriors up 2-0 in the series as they visit Dallas for game three. Let's go late in the first. Under 10 seconds left in the first. Mavs down 6. Luka Doncic with a long three at the buzzer. He's celebrating as he goes back up the court. Mavs trail by 3 after the first. Just over 2 minutes remaining in the second. Warriors down 2. And here's Steph Curry from the corner. Big night for Steph. Turns to see his teammates before the shot even goes through. Curry loving it. Under a minute left in the third quarter now. Warriors are up by 11. Curry, who else? Rattling in the three and feeling it after that shot. Golden State was up 10 points at the end of the third. Early fourth now, Mavericks down 12. Doncic doing what he can, driving in for the one-handed dunk. Mavs down 10. But speaking of one-handed dunks, how about this one from Andrew Wiggins? Off the assist from Curry. This was initially called an offensive foul, but the Warriors challenged that, and they overturned it. They called it an awesome dunk, which it was. Warriors win 109-100 to take a 3-0 series lead. After missing the playoffs each of the last 2 years, Golden State is now one win away from returning to the NBA Finals for the sixth time in 8 seasons. And according to Caesars Sportsbook, Golden State is the odds-on favorite now to win the championship, which of course makes a lot of sense. They only have to win one more game to get to the finals, where the other series is much earlier. So, JJ, when you look at Golden State, I mean, look, a couple years ago, you kind of felt like maybe it was like a last gasp situation for Steph Curry and this crew. How has this season and this postseason changed the way we should look at the Warriors going forward?
So much of this second window is based on them getting Andrew Wiggins, him being really solid at that small forward position, the development of Jordan Poole, going forward, the development of Kuminga, potentially Wiseman. That has extended this window. I think the interesting thing to just put in context for this season is the amount of injuries in the Western Conference. Of course, Kawhi missed the whole season. Paul George missed a lot of this season. Denver without their second and third best players. And then you look at the singular force teams, the Memphis with Ja Morant, Dallas with Luka Doncic. How do those teams build around their star players this offseason? That is sort of the question marks I have. Can the Warriors have a second window that lasts another 2 or 3 seasons? Absolutely. But there's a lot of question marks there.
I feel like you're getting out some, like, peak Clippers Western Conference angst from playing your prime with the Clippers in the loaded West. It's like, that was your life. It's like, this team over here, that team over here.
No, it was just the Warriors. It was just the Warriors.
It was also nice that we put up Mavericks plus 8,000 to win the title. That was polite of us.
So you're telling me there's a chance.
Look, the Warriors always said, we want to be the next Spurs. We want to have a 20-year window where we're at the top of the league or near the top of the league. Their first playoff series win with Steph Curry when they beat the Nuggets in 2013 is 9 years ago now. They've put themselves into position to actually fulfill that goal of being the next Spurs. It's going to take a lot from their young guys because this first core is going to age out. But it is really interesting, as JJ said, it's almost three different windows now. You had the first iteration that won the title and then lost the finals. Then you have the weird Durant team that nobody really knows what to do with because they were invincible. And now you had that little two-year blip, and now they're back. And as JJ said, it's Poole. And it's Wiggins at age 27 in between the old guys and the young guys that has become the bridge to whatever the next thing is going to be. It's really remarkable that they're here.
Kind of a perfect bridge, though. I mean, these young guys are playing with, you know, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, who've done all this winning. That can only be beneficial for them, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the corollary here with the Spurs, of course, is, you know, the big three. As they got older, Kawhi becoming a star player, Danny Green becoming such a valuable role player. You need to be able to draft well, get guys on the bargain, as the Miami Heat do over and over again. They do such a good job with player development. The organizations that can do that and have star players, those are the organizations that have extended runs.
Of course, Curry been the star there for so long. We mentioned earlier he's 34. I mean, I don't know how much time he's got left, but another championship this year. What does that do for him and his status in the pantheon?
First of all, the Heat and the Celtics would like us to just hit the brakes a little bit.
Maybe the
Mavericks.
I hit the brakes 32 minutes ago, very early in the show. I just want to be clear on that.
Let's have them win it first. I'm already getting the shakes about the will Steph Curry finally win his finals MVP discussion and round out his career. That's going to take over the airwaves. Look, what would it mean? I don't think Steph needs anything. Steph is already an all-time great player. Would it help? Would it vault him a couple of spots up? Once you get in that pantheon, every little thing helps. But the guy's incredible. And by the way, 34, he looks... He's a little different than he was when he was 27. He still looks incredible. He's a complete unstoppable force, unlike any other in the NBA, with no signs of really slowing down.
Yeah, absolutely. Does he have what he needs to pull? I mean, you said you like the Eastern team. You said regardless. But, I mean, this is a guy who can take over.
Let's be clear, health dependent. I mean, if the Heat win without Jimmy Butler, I don't think they beat the Warriors. And you need Marcus Smart for the Celtics to be at full strength. I think he's been their most important player throughout this playoffs, and particularly in this series against the Heat. The Warriors can absolutely win the championship. There's a system that they play, and again, it's all centered on Steph Curry, the threat of his shot, the movement they get to score in the paint, him playing out of double teams. They've absolutely destroyed Dallas every time they've double teamed him in this series. To Zach's point and the point about Steph, look, Steph is already one of, I believe, the top 10 or 12 greatest players ever. He's already in that pantheon. Would another championship move him up? Probably. But I don't know that, you know, it would probably take two finals MVPs, two more championships for him to be in that conversation with, Michael Jordan and all those other top five players.
All right, Warriors one win away from claiming the Western Conference title. Let's move toward the other end of the spectrum a little bit and talk about the Los Angeles Lakers. Check out this tweet from our Adrian Wojnarowski. This has to do with the Lakers coaching search. Michigan coach Juwan Howard recently declined a Los Angeles Lakers overture on the franchise's head coaching job. Howard is coaching his two sons, Jace and Jet, in Ann Arbor. Howard played at Michigan with Lakers GM Rob Pelinka and with LeBron James in Miami, but is not interested in joining the Lakers. What does that say to you, Zach, about this Lakers job?
I think maybe it says Juwan Howard is loving life being the head coach of Michigan and coaching his sons. I mean, I don't know that I would want to leave that job to go coach the Lakers, given how much drama and infighting and all that there's been there. But maybe it's just about Michigan. Maybe it's not really about the Lakers.
Yeah, I agree with Zach on that because, you know, Juwan obviously played at Michigan. The opportunity, my sons are getting into basketball, so I understand the appeal of being able to coach your sons. But he's got a long window. He could have a very long tenure there at Michigan and basically be able to choose any job that he wants in the NBA at the right time. Doesn't seem like the timing is right now. Not only with where he is with Michigan coaching his sons, but also the timing of this Lakers job. I'm not sure this is the time that you want to take this Lakers job. Until they start building their team like every other team in the NBA does in modern NBA, I don't think this is a good job.
Why do we think that's going to happen with
the
Lakers?
It's not.
Just want to make sure.
That was kind of the point I was trying to get at, right? Because this isn't just an NBA job. It's the Los Angeles Lakers. It's as prestigious a job as there is, maybe, you know, one of the most prestigious jobs in all of sports. So it definitely says something about where they are right now in their history that it's not a job that you would jump at.
Yeah, I don't think they have the young players. We talk about the bridge with the Warriors. They don't have the young players that can bridge sort of any decline with LeBron James. The roster fit's not great right now. I'm not sure you can build a championship contender with the current roster and their current cap situation. They don't really have draft picks going forward. I don't think they can trade a draft pick till 2027. So there's just not a lot in the short term or the long term to be really excited about this job.
I do look at this, so I feel like this whole discussion is going to become unfair to Terry Stotts and Darvin Ham and Kenny Atkinson, because we're going to frame this as, oh, ha ha, the Lakers can't attract these coaches. Those guys are all really good coaches who will have their picks of other jobs down the line. And the other thing on the Lakers, I think we're all getting too low on Anthony Davis. I think that's the player that I'm most interested in their team next season. It reminds me of Paul George after the bubble, when he kind of became an object of derision and people forgot how good this guy is. I'm expecting a huge year from Anthony Davis next year, and I think people are getting too low.
Well, it's because we barely saw him this year, right? I mean, that's the thing, right? Like Anthony Davis, if he play, I mean, can he still be that guy that they need him to be?
Well, he can. The reason people are low on Anthony Davis is because he was very inefficient as a jump shooter this year, and he was hurt for most of the season. And on top of that, they lost. And some of that, I think, is the spacing issues that they had. Some of that is the ancillary pieces around that. So if they can build a roster that sort of fits around LeBron and Anthony Davis like they had in 2020, yeah, we could see peak Anthony Davis again. He's young enough that he can get back to that form.
I mean, there's talent. Like you talk about, we showed those three finalists that Woj has reported for the Lakers head coaching job. I mean, one of them will inherit a team with some talent, but to the point we were making before, it's more than just a head coach that they need.
Well, and just like you just said, like the team they had in 2020 that won the championship, they could have just kept that team.
Right.
Nobody made them break up that team. They had it. They could have just kept it.
Nobody? Or was that something that happened internally?
No, nobody did. Nope. There was a bunch of decisions that went haywire.
They did. They did go haywire, and as a result, the Lakers did not reach the playoffs and now don't have a head coach. Let's talk some more hockey. We have the Florida series. We got Steven Stamkos and the Lightning taking on the Panthers. Just under 3 minutes into the second period. Score tied at one. Andre Palat with the back pass. Eric Chernak corrals it, rips it to the top corner and scores. Talk about perfect puck placement by Chernak. Lightning up 2-1. Under 10 minutes to play in a second. Nikita Kucherov sends it to Steven Stamkos in the circle. Stamkos with a one-timer for the goal. Look, they're partying outside the arena in Tampa where the weather's perfect. Time winding down in the third. Panthers down two. Aaron Ekblad takes the shot inside. Panthers are trying to get it over the line, but Jan Rutta gets the puck out of there. Rutta just barely getting the puck out before the goal to end the Panthers' hope. Lightning go on to win 5-1 and lead the series 3-0. Florida is now the sixth President's Trophy winner to trail 3-0 in a playoff series, and three of the previous five were ultimately swept. The Lightning were the last team to do so in 2019. They have, of course, since won back-to-back Stanley Cup titles. We come back, we have the very latest on Deshaun Watson as he prepares for his first official practice as a Cleveland Brown. Come back and talk some NFL with us on Get Up.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back on Get Up. How about a little eye candy? Andrew Wiggins, we showed this earlier. I don't think we spent enough time on it, guys. It's this monster dunk on Luka toward the end of the game last night. JJ, thoughts on this posterizing situation?
Well, number one, I'm just proud of Luka for not making a business decision and actually jumping and contesting. But then when he realized that business decision was a bad decision, he flops. Like, it's just, it's great.
Well, and the basketball gods let it stand as a dunk, as they should have.
Yeah, obviously that was overturned. Here's what Luka had to say about getting dunked on by Andrew Wiggins.
That was impressive, I'm not going to lie. I saw the video again, I was like, oof. That was pretty incredible, you know. I wish I had those bunnies.
May not have the bunnies, but he's still getting his. He's dropped 40 points in back-to-back games has Luka, but Wiggins is making him work, and he leads all players in these conference finals with a plus-minus of plus 66, while Doncic is at minus 61, the lowest of any player in either series. Obviously, a series going hard Golden State's way. Back to the NFL now. The Browns will shift their voluntary offseason workout program into high gear this week when OTAs begin, marking the first time quarterback Deshaun Watson will participate in on-field work with the majority of his new teammates. Obviously, we know a lot going on around Deshaun Watson, and it's all very serious. He faces 22 separate civil lawsuits from women alleging sexual misconduct, and as a result of that, he faces a league investigation that could result in a fine and or suspension under the personal conduct policy. So, Mike T, put on your GM hat for us, if you will, and imagine you're running the Browns in this situation. You've acquired Watson. He's there for OTAs. But there's a lot of uncertainty around the situation.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, Dan, this is still a very serious situation. But from the team perspective, you're trying to get answers from the league. You're desperately trying to get answers. So you're calling the league, trying to get timelines, because this is your starting quarterback. And if he's not going to be available for any period of time, be it 3 games, 4 games, whatever it may be, that has a material impact on roster construction, who you may keep. Because, again, if you're on the roster on opening day as a veteran, you're guaranteed for the season. So assuming it's Jacoby Brissett as the starter, who's the backup? Are you going to go with someone less experienced to give yourself a little more flexibility? And then, of course, Dan, you know, you still have Baker Mayfield under contract with a fully guaranteed $18 million. So there's a huge variable there, and you need feedback, and you want to get some sort of guidance from the league as quickly as possible.
Now, of course, you know, and again, like checking in, just doing some reporting on this situation the last couple of weeks, there are a couple of differences, right? Number one, under the new CBA, there's a jointly appointed discipline officer by the NFL and the NFLPA. So even once the league's investigation concludes, it's going to have to go to her for a final ruling on whether any discipline is imposed. And then the other thing, Mike, it was told to me last week by some sources close to this situation, the 22 lawsuits still outstanding. The NFL might be hesitant to impose discipline in a situation where those suits could go to trial and more evidence could come out that their investigation was unable to unearth, and then all of a sudden it looks like whatever discipline they went with was insufficient. So this could actually take – we could be in a situation where the season starts with Deshaun Watson playing quarterback for the Browns and still awaiting a final decision here.
Dell Tech Fest starts now. To thank you for 40 unforgettable years, Dell Technologies is celebrating with anniversary savings on their most popular tech. For a limited time only, save on select next-gen PCs like the XPS 13 Plus, where you can make the everyday easier with Windows 11. Unleash more possibilities with cutting-edge systems, their most advanced features, and great prices. Plus, curate your dream setup with deals on select monitors, mice, and more must-have electronics and accessories. When you shop online at Dell.com/deals, you'll have access to state-of-the-art technology to match your forward-thinking spirit and free shipping on everything. Anniversary savings await you for a limited time only at Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Yeah, I think that's possible. You know, the league, what they'll tell you is like they want to be thorough, they want to get it right. And sometimes those timelines, Dan, you're making a great point, don't line up with the chronological aspect of the season. So it is possible that Deshaun Watson starts on opening day for the Browns and then at some point subsequently has a suspension, which, as you said, is proscribed in the new CBA. So there are a lot of different variables and permutations because, again, the civil lawsuits will have their own timeline, which may not match up with the NFL's timeline.
Right, so obviously a lot of very serious non-football situations facing Deshaun Watson, but we are a sports show. We do want to talk about the football. And so Dan Orlovsky back with us. When you look at this Cleveland Browns team, how do you size them up? What kind of team are they with Deshaun Watson on the field?
Oh, if Deshaun Watson plays 14 games plus, they're a Super Bowl contender. They're a bona fide division champion and Super Bowl contender. Last time we watched Deshaun Watson play football, 2020, the best quarterback in all of football with the worst running game in football. Now he's going to Cleveland. And he has the best running game, or one of the best running games in football. But if he plays 12 games, Dan, or 12 or less, they don't have a chance because the division is too good. The conference is too good. But if he gets 14 games in, they got a chance to knock off a team that has an MVP in Baltimore. They got a team or a chance to knock off the team that represented the conference last year in the AFC when it comes to the Cincinnati Bengals. He's that good of a player. Dominant offensive line, two good receivers in Amari Cooper and their draft pick David Bell, really good tight ends, a defensive line that's active, a secondary that's young and talented. If he's able to play a good amount of games, they can win that division and go to the Super Bowl.
Mike T, do you agree?
Yeah, it's hard to agree with Dan on a Monday, but I basically do. Here's where Cleveland catches a break, which is their first four opponents are Carolina, the Jets, Pittsburgh, which, by the way, the Steelers, it's weird to say, but it could be the third game of Kenny Pickett's career, and then their fourth game is against the Falcons. So their first four games are completely winnable. After that, week number five is against the Chargers. So, you know, Dan, you made an interesting point about he could start, then get suspended. If I'm the Browns, I want certainty as quickly as possible. And if there is a suspension, those first four games, in my opinion, would be the best four from a Brown perspective. But again, yeah, just to emphasize this, and I've been in that seat, you don't control when these suspensions hit. That is the league's decision. And as you said, Dan G, it's actually now a joint decision in the new CBA. So a lot of complexities here, but I agree with Dan O, which is if Deshaun Watson plays a meaningful number of games, they have a chance to make a really deep run. They have a great roster, but this is a huge question mark.
Quick final word for
Look at you with those last name abbreviations. I think the challenge for the Browns is really building two teams. One that is going to be Deshaun Watson, but also having to prepare for a team that might be led by their backup quarterback, Jacoby Brissett.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that situation. Yesterday, we were keeping an eye on the PGA Championship, second golf major of the year, final round. Let's go to the 18th hole where Justin Thomas, sitting at 5-under, putting for the co-lead with Mito Pereira, and he misses the putt. stays at 5-under. But, you know, put a pin in that. It's going to matter. Will Zalatoris at 5-under looking to save par on the 18th. He sinks it, and he is tied with Thomas at 5-under. But that shouldn't have mattered because Mito Pereira had the lead at 6-under, teeing off on 18, and then does this. Way right, ending up in the water. He had to take a drop. He took a double bogey, needed par to win the tournament, took a double bogey, didn't even make it into the playoff, which was between Thomas and Zalatoris. Three-hole playoff in the PGA Championship. We'll jump to the second one, all square after one hole. Thomas, with a nice bounce, driving the green on the 302-yard par four. Thomas would later tap in for a birdie. Zalatoris is going to try to match with a birdie of his own, but he misses it to the right. He pars the hole. Thomas holding a one-stroke lead on Zalatoris with one playoff hole left. Now we're on the final playoff hole. After reaching the green, Thomas has a short putt to win the PGA Championship. He taps it in. He wins. Thomas trailed by 7 strokes on Sunday. That is tied for the largest 54-hole comeback ever in PGA Championship history. Sunday morning, we're going to have the most famous race on the Formula One circuit, all the glitz and glam of the Monaco Grand Prix. Our coverage begins at 7:30 Eastern with Grand Prix Sunday, and the race starts at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 Pacific, right here on ESPN and the ESPN app. Coming up, the Packers get OTAs underway this week, and their most important player is not likely to be there. Does Aaron Rodgers owe it to Green Bay to show up? We will debate that when we come back.